What's going on, Joe?
Fellas, chilling, man. Just trying to keep the wheels on the cart these days and all the madness. That's all I can really attest to.
I hear you.
Joe, what time do you wake up in the morning?
Usually, I actually wake up at about 6, dude. It's crazy. I have two dogs that, like, are just rise and shine at about 6, so I'm up.
Hell yeah, you got a new dog. I mentioned that earlier. Joe got a new dog.
That was the first thing Phil said. I'm like, oh,
that's
shit.
That's, like, way more interesting to me than any of the other shit going on. It's just a new dog.
Dude, when I first got her, like, when you first get a new puppy, we got her, like, a few weeks old. They got to pee at 3 a.m. They can't make it through the night. So I've been on this, like, crackhead COVID. Wake up at 2:30, take her out to pee, wake up at 6.
That's incredible.
We have little dogs, but we put the pads near the door, and they pee on the pad, and it's what a convenience.
There you go.
I never wake up.
Yeah, you've turned your dogs into cats.
Yeah, basically. I don't know if you can hear them, dude, but they're like whimpering outside the door.
Oh, geez.
They want to be on the show so bad.
Joe, I want to give you just a quick introduction for those that don't know you, although this is going to be a very local-centric show. We're talking about a lot of very local things in today's episode, which was unplanned, but I'm pretty happy with. Joe is a guy who is now a local politician. He's part of the city of Syracuse, and we'll let him talk about that a little bit. Beforehand, if you saw the image, you might have seen him rocking out in front of a crowd. He is an accomplished international musician who has toured the world and played festivals when there used to be groups of people together in public, and also been an incredible activist, an incredible supporter of Bernie Sanders. In fact, one of the places that I first saw him was literally opening for Bernie Sanders, playing some of his incredible music in front of a huge crowd in downtown Syracuse when Bernie came and visited in, 2015, 2016 at the time. Joe is an all-around great guy that is in a wide variety of things, and also why I'm happy to have him in elected office, because he doesn't look like the suit former lawyer, former accountant turned politician, and we need more of that.
When I first got in office, I said to my wife, I'm like, I'm not going to really have to wear a suit like all the time. And my wife's like, yeah, dude, that's what you signed up for. I was like, I don't think I will. And I tried to rock jeans and a sports jacket for as long as I could, but I do want a couple of suits now.
I got to go buy a suit.
No.
This is not the way to go. That's great, man. But Joe, so let me ask you, you're now... Are you twice elected, or are we going into your first re-election? Correct? I forget where we're at.
It's 2-year terms, so I'm halfway through my second term. I'm currently running for my third term.
That's what I thought. So you've been re-elected now. It's not a one-off fluke thing. You're really in there. And what is your job? What does a guy in city government do?
Yeah, so... You have three basic roles as a city councilor. One is constituent service, which I think is really important. That's if people are on the local Facebook page complaining that there should be a stop sign at XY Street, or the trash didn't get picked up, or this building is always a mess. Is the city going to do anything about it? Those kind of things are constituent service, reaching out, seeing what problems are in the neighborhood, trying to problem solve with city departments. The other is writing new legislation, introducing new laws for the city, taking initiatives with city funding, trying to develop new programs. And the third is fiduciary agent, just basically any money the mayor spends, he needs to get approval from the council to do. We have to look through all the money he plans on spending and decide if it's a green light or not. Those are the three big roles that we do.
I gotcha. So there's a lot of hard work involved. And is this a full-time job? Is this one of those elected positions that you do in addition to your job, or how does that work?
What was great was I still kept the music going, and so I'd work Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings, and then I could work the council gig 9 to 5, and it was a great contrast because I'd work harder on the weekends for music and then work during the week for council. So it's technically it's it's a gray area. We work the same. Buffalo, for example, their counselors get paid $74,000 a year, and it's very much expected to be a full-time job, though it's not different. Buffalo is probably double the population of Syracuse, but not dissimilar in the amount of responsibilities that a counselor has, whereas we get paid like $30,000, and it's meant to be a part-time job, but we have to keep records showing that we work over 35 hours a week for 3 months of the year. So you are supposed to provide documentation proving that you do work, which is 35 hours a week is basically full-time.
Sure.
Or it's more than part-time. So it's really a gray area. It's definitely, when I started, it was 20K. And I actually introduced the legislation to bump it up to 30, which people went nuts. Politicians trying to pay themselves more. But again, I was thinking about it this morning with the minimum wage, because it hadn't been raised since like 1999. So it's, we're still doing the same work.
Yeah.
That was a 35K a year job by relation in 1999, but we're just getting paid 20K. So it was kind of more of an adjustment for time than an actual raise. But yeah, so that's, it's, to me, I always say it's like a full-time job with part-time pay, because it's more stressful than other jobs. But I love it.
Yeah, you're going to get, it doesn't end when the clock stops. You've got people all over you. You've got issues that aren't resolved yet, obviously. It may not be for a while, but...
Yeah, I would be instantly corrupt if I got into politics. I was like, how long was it going to take to just instantly corrupt you? I would not do a good job.
Elect Phil. He'll make you laugh and take your cash.
There you go. You probably do well.
So, Joe, I want to ask you a little bit of inside baseball. Syracuse uniquely has a mayor who was elected as an independent. He didn't play this game that many of us feel is the only choice, where you got to pick one of these two teams, and he came out victorious. I believe you've been a big supporter of his for a long time. As a Democrat, you're elected as a Democrat. How does that dynamic work? Is it beneficial or is it hurting the mayor?
I think it has its pluses and minuses. I think at the time when he got elected, that cycle, 2017, pretty much unanimously, everybody thought that they were left between Hillary and Trump. The thing, I managed all Bernie's social sites. I managed all his Facebook, like all the local Syracuse pages and stuff of trying to advocate. So wading into political battles on Facebook was pretty much my full-time job, with putting thousands of dollars behind paid ads to get attention to different events and stuff we were doing for Bernie. And the dominant narrative at that time in 2017 was just basically everybody saying, like the South Park episode, choosing between a turd sandwich. People hated Hillary, people hated Trump, and just everybody hated both parties. And it was like, it seemed the dominant, I think somewhere around half the registered voting population is registered outside of a party. So I felt the vibe for Walsh to come in the year after that was perfect for him, because he was just like, look, I've just never registered with a party. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I take a little bit from both sides, and I think it's more important to focus on the issues. That message just super resonated at that time. This cycle, I don't know how it's going to play, because I think the partisan lines have really been drawn even deeper, and like more people who were like, I lean Democrat, but I'm not going to be a Democrat, are now becoming more active in Democratic politics. And I think people are like, they're realizing that in order to defeat the Republican army, that was the realization I had as someone who was relatively, obviously, if I was going to join one party, it would be the Democratic Party. But I was always more, I was a Ralph Nader guy in the 90s and disengaged from the system. But then I kind of realized, like, damn, this Republican army is well-organized, well-funded, well-structured. And if you're going to overcome them, you've got to join the organization that has the most resources and the most ability. And seeing the Sanders path of engaging with the party and taking the using the Democratic line to convey that kind of Ralph Nader message seem way more effective than trying to go Green Party routes. I think that it's had a lot of strengths for the mayor, but I don't know how it's going to play out this cycle in a different age. But I do think it's been very beneficial for him in a lot of ways.
And that's an interesting dynamic that you touched on there is going forward. Like you said, you're a Democrat. Your colleague, fellow Democrat, Khalid Bey, has thrown his hat in. And I can imagine this is the type of thing that becomes a real challenge for a guy like you, where do you have to be loyal to the party if you think that Ben is a better choice going forward? Or how does that...
Yeah.
How do you navigate those waters, especially as a progressive guy in this party?
Well, it's very much a tightrope, but for me, the Democratic Party locally has put in kind of provisions saying that if Democrats want to stay a member of the committee and want to be a member of the party, then they have to support the Democratic candidate. So that's my intention. I will support whoever the Democrat is. But again, it is a difficult dynamic for me. The Walsh administration, not only Ben himself, but his team has been awesome for me to collaborate with. We've done in politics, you get stuff done, and they've helped me with some big initiatives that I want to get done. The lead initiative that we did, fighting lead poisoning, we worked hand in hand, reopening some community centers in my district. We collaborated great on all these projects. So you develop friendships over the time. But of course, like Michael Green and Khalid Bey are both in the mayor's race and both very close friends and close allies of mine on the council. So it's one of those things where, you know, the way I try to treat it is as difficult as it gets is to treat it like a Yankees Red Sox kind of thing where it's, or boxing, where it's we don't have to hate each other. We don't have to dislike each other with politics. Like, hopefully they'll be able to keep it collegial even if they're on opposite sides of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. It's an interesting thing to navigate. Speaking of navigate, one of the huge things, that was the worst segue ever, by the way. That was like a Phil Farda should be making fun of me for that. One of the biggest issues.
Am I on mute?
One of the biggest things happening in Syracuse is this big I-81 project, right? We got this interstate. It's got bridges that are getting scary old. They got to do something new about it. I think we finally got a plan, right? We know what we're actually doing now.
Hey, is that the tunnel? Because I'm not super familiar with Syracuse. Weren't they going to build a tunnel under the city or
that
something?
That was one of the ideas.
That was one of the three proposed options. It was that the tunnel option was insane for a number of reasons. One, because it was like a couple of billion more than every other option. And also, like, Syracuse is known as the Salt City. The reason we're called the Salt City is because we have these warm rivers of salted water that run underneath our city. So, like, taking a big tunnel and trying to develop walls would obviously present a greater challenge than all the other options.
Well, how long was it going to take? Wasn't it going to take 25 years or something? Like,
yeah,
that's what I want to drive through for the next 20 years is like construction of a, it's something like Gotham City would do.
Totally
build it. So what did they land on? I'm sorry. What did they land on?
No, they're going with, we believe. So like the state, it's a long, complicated bureaucratic process. That's very confusing, but basically, the state has said that they want, the state DOT has come forth and said the community grid is the best option, which for those who are unfamiliar would be raising all those elevated viaducts and bringing it all to street level within the city.
So it'd be more like a boulevard than a raised highway.
Cool. Yep. And this is something like, I'm the transportation chair for the council, so this is something I've been swimming in since the year before I got on council. I've researched this so extensively, and it's clearly the best of the three options. To rebuild the elevated viaduct, you'd have to build it, I think, something like 20 feet wider and 10 feet higher, because the complication is, like, since it was built in the 50s and 60s, there's no shoulders. So if you get an accident trying to do that, you just got to pull over in the middle of a
it's a nightmare.
cars streaming by you at 65. So it doesn't meet safety standards of the modern era. So you'd have to build shoulders on either side of it, make it a lot wider, change a bunch of things. And that would, you know, require the destruction of 40 more buildings in downtown Syracuse. So like all around, like rebuilding the viaduct just seemed like a really, but there's also the issue of all the land that's adjacent. You could live next to a boulevard and see it as a metropolitan experience. If you live under an underpass,
yeah,
it's pretty gross. So all the property value that's around 690 and 81, those two highways, has decreased to 1/10 of the value of land in the rest of the city. So if your parcel of land was worth $100,000, if it's right next to that, it's worth $10,000. So there's a whole argument about we're wasting a lot of space doing it this way. And I'm really hopeful. So the state has said they want to go with this grid option, raising everything, putting it street level. But the federal government still needs to sign off, give the seal of approval. And a big thing about it is we have to have large community meetings, like cafeteria style, invite everyone in the city to come in and speak their mind about what's going to happen. Yeah. And obviously with COVID, we can't do any of that stuff. So that's held up another bottleneck blocking point to moving forward as well.
Yeah, I understand that our new transportation secretary, former Mayor Pete Buttigieg, is supposed to be on this and working with the city on that. Is that an accurate report?
Yeah, I will be. I have a prep meeting today and then a meeting with the Federal Department of Transportation. I'm not sure if Mayor Pete himself will be there, but his representatives will be at the meeting tomorrow, meeting with the city. I'll be in on that. And yeah, his first tweet as soon as he got transportation chair was like, highways have ripped apart communities of color and created horrible segregation and created these horrible urban environments. We need to undo the mistakes of the past. So pretty much like directly tweeting about 81. Yeah. So we feel really positive. Obviously, it's a lot better than the previous administration with our juice and buy-in between Cuomo and Buttigieg.
That's wonderful. And like you said, it's living next to a highway. Everybody immediately knows the connotation to that. The other side of that is you have these highways and you can fly through the city quickly. And the downside is you're going to go through stoplights and you're going to go through things like this. But we got to also keep in mind that Syracuse, like many big cities, has the bypasses. We've got the 481s where if you're just trying to not get downtown but get to the other side of the city, there will still be high-speed highways that you could jump on and do that, the thruway and all of that. So I think it's interesting. And of course, for businesses, you've just created a whole nother main street, a whole nother main thoroughfare that you can have a ton of shops and restaurants that you just pull over to. And I think that's a drastic improvement as well.
Absolutely. We were, for me in politics, like it's, how to say it, you're always trying to bushwhack through some problems and cut with your machete through some seemingly impenetrable forest. And the best thing to do if you can is look at another city nearby that's already dealt with this problem and how do they deal with it? Because traditionally, if you look through America and look through other cities and say, okay, we have this problem with X, Y, and Z, how did another city get out of this pickle successfully? It often you can't compare apples to apples because it's like Seattle or Portland or something that's West Coast or the weather's nicer, or whatever it is, or they're a larger metropolitan area. But for the 81 issue, we've got Rochester's inner loop just right across the road from us. And it's like Rochester's a very similar city, similar problems, similar dynamics. And they had a similar thing with 81 where they had, it was a depressed highway and then elevated highway. There were bridges and dips, but they decided to put it all, like you're saying, make it all a boulevard for their inner loop, for their highway. And I think they saw something like $260 million of new investment along that corridor. And
oh, wow.
We did a walking tour meeting with people who owned restaurants and breweries along the road. And they were like, oh, our foot traffic has increased like 80%. Like it's night and day from before. And now it's going to be, the only real problem is we're going to deal with like 5-6 years of like downtown Syracuse just being absolutely shut down and chaotic. But I think after that's done, if we do go with the community grid and it does get implemented, I think you're right. It's like just opens the door for like more community integration and more economic development. I'm hopeful.
And that's what we need, especially after this. I'm cautiously optimistic that even before the pandemic, even before everything shut down, we had seen a big change. There was a lot less people going out, a lot less people going to live venues for anything, a lot less civic groups. There used to be all these, the Elks, and you had all the JCs and all these different things that people were involved in. And it seems like group activities in the past few decades have died out. It's my cautious optimism that after being shut in, people will be so sick of that, that we have a real resurgence of getting out of the house and hanging out with other people and being a community again. I don't, what do you guys think?
I hope so. My God, dude, I'm so broke. Like, I need people. They just put the capacity back up to like 10 per party per table now. And I'm usually on top of that. I didn't realize it happened last week. So I went to my normal Tuesday trivia night and it was jam packed. And I was like, ooh, this is good. This looks illegal. But it was actually just people got the okay to go out, you know, in parties of 10, and they did. The whole place was packed. So that's good for business, man.
Joe, as a musician, and Phil, you're welcome to chime in as well, both as live entertainers, where do you think this goes for music and that type of thing?
I just echo your and Phil's sentiment, but it's more hopeful than any crystal ball. I feel the same thing that you felt, Matt, that God, the joke that I always do is younger folks would come in while I'm playing a set and like hop on stage with me and take a selfie and then leave. It's like, let me post this to Insta. Like, I'm at a Joe Driscoll show and then walk off. And it was just kind of like, that's like literally things that happened frequently. So I feel like we've gotten in this kind of different understanding of entertainment altogether. It's like Netflix, it's like YouTube, it's like Spotify. It's like, I don't listen to albums. Like, I call up the 10% of the interesting part of the album that I want to access for free at this time. And it's just like, we just have this whole molecular shift in entertainment where it's like, you are on demand to entertain me in the way I want to be entertained.
They don't know what I know, man. Like, a full Joe Driscoll show. I was thinking about this last night. I don't think I've ever gone to a Joe Driscoll show and not gotten laid afterwards. I'd have to really run back my memory, but I can almost remember every time I'm at a Joe Driscoll show, the night ends in sex. It's amazing.
That's
if people knew that, they would stay for the whole set.
It's good stuff.
A lot of married couples can claim a Joey D show for their first romantic encounter.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I believe it.
I bet a lot of matches have been made. Yeah.
I just can't wait till we can get back to Funk and Waffles and watch it perform there. I love that venue. I think it's just the coolest little spot in town. And when they put on great music, like somebody like you, it just makes it even better.
Joe, let me ask you this. Do you think everything you just said about how entertainment's shifting, and I agree with you, it's toward that like instant gratification. Do you think that's going to continue? Do you think that's like the shift where entertainment's going? Because I'm on the fence. I'm not positive. I hope that once we're able to gather in crowds again, there will be that burst of the thrill of being out and in a crowd and just like dancing with strangers. But maybe not.
It's super hard to call. For me, it's, I would hope so. All I can really say is I hope, because I see two different, did I go away?
Oh, you just you blocked your camera, but we're still hearing you.
Okay. I don't know what's going on here. I'm in my studio, so I don't know if I'm getting internet.
Well, there we go. Internet. You're coming back.
I don't know. It really feels, people are really getting more. I don't know if this becomes a cultural trend that like I just call up Netflix it's really hard to like combat, like when Napster and all that stuff first happened, when like music changed from going out and spending $15 on the new Pearl Jam album and sitting there and like reading all the lyrics and looking at the cover art and everything to like, I'm just going to watch Jeremy on YouTube. And then it was like, you don't buy the album, you don't sit and listen to it. It just became this whole cultural change. But also it was like free. It was a superior product. Like, I always wonder, it's like, can you battle against superior products that are like market? So it's, I wonder about that, but I'm hopeful. The only thing that would change this dynamic would be what you're talking about, Phil, is like people are so pent up that they're like, I want something different than just sitting around watching Netflix. I want to like interact with people and feel that charge of like life again. And I think that if anything can do it, I think COVID would have done it. Like a lot of people, I've heard a lot of people joking saying that like the roaring 20s are about to start as soon as we can. And
yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
I feel that. I know it. Whether the rest of the population joins me or not, I will definitely be in some bars running jukeboxes, like putting $20 in, going to see my favorite bands and rocking out as soon as this is all over, for sure. I hope the rest of the world joins me.
We were talking
the way to go.
Earlier about how, because one of my thoughts I had was, by not going out, I'm saving so much money. Like a night out, I might buy a ticket and I might spend $60 at the bar, and maybe it's like a $75 night. But then I was talking to Matt earlier about, since COVID happened, like me and my wife will order dinner like from Uber Eats or something, and it's still $70. Like by the time it comes with all the fees and the tip and everything, it's the same amount of money. Right. I would rather be out.
Totally.
So, fellas, we are just about out of time, but I don't want to let Joe go without letting people know where to find him, and also let people know that you've got your own podcast and content if people want to hear more about you and interesting people in town, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me, my politics website, JoeDriscoll315, my music website, Joe Driscoll Music, on Facebook, Joe Driscoll Politics, on Facebook, Joe Driscoll Music, and my podcast, Salt City Grind, has been really fun. I'm just a huge consumer of pods myself, and I felt like there was really a gap in the market of people just having casual conversations about things that were politically interesting in Syracuse. We've been having those conversations, and I've been enjoying it a lot.
That's great, man. That's good stuff, and I highly encourage folks to check that out and to, you know, stay tuned in to what's going on. They say all politics is local, but the reality is we got more room to make change and do things that impact our everyday lives at the local level than we'll ever have in D.C. These are the guys to pay attention to and the issues to pay attention to, and I strongly encourage folks to do that.
Amen. I wholeheartedly appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Joe, Phil, if you guys will stay with me just a second, I want Phil just to point out a couple things that he's got going on, and then we'll kick off air, and I'll just say goodbye to you guys. Phil, one more time, tell everybody where they can find you, and also tell us about this diaper thing one more time.
Sure, man. So I started wearing diapers recently. Dude, Joe, this is a Syracuse-based event. I'm working with the CNY Diaper Bank. Some of my friends are on the board there. And we're this Friday, it's February 12th, we're doing a virtual trivia party. It's a fundraiser. It's free to play. It's just donate whatever you can. So they're asking for a $25 donation if you can make it, but any amount helps. You can come play for free with us. 100% of the proceeds are going to the CNY Diaper Bank, and they do just wonderful things for families in need. If you need to know more, you can just visit the event. We have links to their page, tell you all the benefits of it. Your contribution, it buys diapers. It helps out our local community a great deal. And I'm going to be on Fish Guy Media Live streaming that virtual event, and we're going to be having some beers and hanging out and having fun. It's going to be a good time, man.
And guys, for everybody watching and listening live on Twitch, I thank you very much. Shout out to Artie, who's been in the chat, having a great time. I'm sorry we weren't able to get in with you, but I'm glad you've been enjoying Joe and a lot of the things that we've got going on. Follow the podcast, like, follow, subscribe everywhere, YouTube, TikTok. We got cool content coming out everywhere. I'm sorry there's a million things to like, but it's free and it helps. So if you like this show, help a man out, will you? This has been the Matt Major Show. We will see you guys tomorrow at 8 a.m. Later.